This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Tonight in Melbourne, the Wheeler Centre is holding a special event for lovers of podcasts and those who wish to start their own. Julie Shapiro is the executive producer of Boston-based podcast network Radiotopia, a label widely referred to as the indie record label of podcasts, and produces such hit shows as Ear Hustle, The Heart, and Song Exploder, among others. Prior to this, Julie lived and worked in Sydney as executive producer of ABCRN's creative audio unit. Tonight, she's set to grace the stage at the Northcote Town Hall, along with host and recent Walkley Award winner Sophie Black, to discuss all things podcasting and radio. After the chat, she'll join a bevy of judges who will lend their ears to the Wheeler Centre's search for new podcasting talent. The competition is aptly named So You Think You Can Pod. If you can't make it tonight, you're in luck, because Julie Shapiro and Sophie Black are in the studio with me now. Julie and Sophie, welcome.
Thank you, Dan.
Hello, nice to be here.
Now, I'd love to hear from both of you on this, but Julie, let's start with you. In an age where literally anyone can release and record a podcast, what makes a podcast successful?
Oh, a lot of hard work put into anything. I always think it starts with the idea. It starts with having an original idea, a certain voice and desire to say something new in the world, or to say something new about something old in the world, and an idea that can sustain over time and that you can develop and evolve with as you go. But I'll bring it back to that, like, real fire in the belly, desire to make something and put the hard work into making it excellent.
Sophie?
Completely agree. I think hard work is something that can be overlooked when it comes to talking about podcasting, because it is so accessible in so many ways, and it does seem like all you need is a couple of mics and two friends having a conversation, and that can work for some formats and some concepts, depending on the chemistry, but some of the truly great podcasts are so labor intensive. There are so many hours and hours and hours of work buried within the work. And you can hear that in the end. You can hear that labor and creativity and thought that has gone into that work.
I guess it comes with layers as well. You can hear a podcast that's just been a chat, or you can hear a podcast where there has been that months of work put behind it. Well, that brings me to my next question then. Sophie, you're a producer on the Messenger podcast, which deals with tales from inside the detention centre at Manus Island. How has that long-form style of podcasting helped you tell that story?
I think, interestingly enough, the Messenger podcast was the winner from last year's So You Think You Can Pod competition, which was the first time we held the competition. And the concept came from a team called Behind the Wire, who work with people who have a lived experience of detention, who are either still in detention or have been experienced detention at some point in their lives. And they had this concept where they had a journalist called Michael Green, who had already at that point been talking to a detainee on Manus Island called Abdul Aziz Mohammed, who was in Manus Island Detention Centre and had been at that point for around 18 months. And they had already shared thousands and thousands of WhatsApp messages between each other, little 30-second voice messages. So Behind the Wire came to us with this huge archive of tape. And they wanted to tell Aziz's story, but they also wanted to tell the story of Michael and Aziz's evolving friendship. So we were struck by that idea, not only because they had this wealth of material, but because the story of detention in Australia and the refugee story has been told over and over and over again to the point of fatigue. People don't seem to be listening to the headlines anymore. And so we were attracted to this. The medium of podcasting is the I word is constantly repeated, but there's an intimacy to podcasting that we wanted to merge with telling this kind of story. And we wanted to tell one man's story and one man's experience of it. And I don't think we could have done it in any other format, well, in any other medium. So it evolved. We eventually collaborated with Behind the Wire. They won the competition and then we co-produced The Messenger with them, and it evolved into a 10-part series. And it told of Aziz's experience within detention, but also his life up until that point, how he had arrived there. And then since we finished up the series, which was a month before Manus Detention Centre was set to be dissolved by the government, Aziz has continued to send updates to Michael Green, and we've been putting out little tiny mini episodes just to keep people up to date with the situation as it continues to unfold.
It's really that direct feed into what's happening, which is super interesting. Julie, I'm sure maybe you've had the same experience. I'm not sure how closely you produced Ear Hustle. But that kind of, it's not just that fly on the wall documentary, it's actual voices from inside. Would you want to talk about that?
Absolutely. And I have been very struck by some of the parallels between The Messenger and Ear Hustle. And I don't know if I have really appreciated The Messenger, and I've been kind of proselytizing about it because I feel like it's such an important and well-executed way to tell this story. I don't know if it's because I lived here, so I was more invested in the politics and the situation than I would have been, or if it's because I came from working very intimately and very closely on Ear Hustle for the past 6 months. But the combination of those two things, so I've been paying close attention and thinking about those similarities. I think that demonstrating that you can make something from someone on the inside and the outside, like that collaborative effort, was very important for us with Ear Hustle as well, because so our show Ear Hustle is a podcast from San Quentin State Prison, and it's stories of life inside prison told by the men living those lives. Now, it's co-hosted by an artist, a woman, Nigel Poor, who has been volunteering at San Quentin and co-hosts with an incarcerated man, Erlon Woods. And together, they present the stories of the guys around them, and they also lead listeners through those experiences, both with Erlon relating their stories to his own life in San Quentin and Nigel sort of serving as proxy for the listener to ask some of the questions that we might be having as we listen. And this chemistry between them has been very important, and that's grown over the course of the season as well. And people have become as invested in them as co-hosts as they are starting to feel empathetic toward the men whose stories they're hearing. So I feel like there are some really interesting and gorgeous parallels between the two. Of course, they're also different in some ways. But yeah, I think we could not have done Ear Hustle with cameras. Well, literally, we could not have done Ear Hustle with cameras because it's so hard to get any media into and out of San Quentin. But it's a lot easier than some prisons in that, there are a few reasons Ear Hustle has accomplished what it has. And one is the chemistry between Nigel and Erlon. It just simply wouldn't work if you threw anybody in there, and the trust that exists between them because she's been volunteering for so long. But it's also the administration at the prison that's been very behind the project, very supportive. So every episode is approved by the public information officer, Sam Robinson, who's also become like a character in the podcast that people, he has fans of his own at this point. And there was just this kind of happy storm of things converging to make the podcast possible.
As well as that sort of one-on-one aspect, there's also the aspect of a serial with podcasting. Now, back in the day, Julia, the family used to sit around the radio and listen to radio plays, and that podcasting is a much more individual experience, and we consume it individually, but we tend to talk about it on social media forums or whatever with our, with your respected fans or people that appreciate the same thing. How vital is social media to the promotion of podcasts?
Oh, the engagement has been just off the charts. It just gets higher and bigger and louder and cooler. I think there's something about podcasting that listeners feel like they can be part of the conversation. They're not just receiving it. It's not so one way anymore. They're part of a community that listens and they talk to each other about it. There are Facebook groups. There are forums. There's so much going on in that space where listeners create their own conversations. They don't necessarily even need the podcasters to weigh in. It's nice when they do, I would say, in the Radiotopia Network. All of our hosts engage pretty closely with listeners. I also think we're seeing more live events with podcasting, and that also is tapping into bringing the community out. Come sit amongst your fellow fans, get to see, your heroes on stage, but also get to see all around you who else is listening.
I went to a live taping of My Favourite Murder, which they were here in Melbourne, and I'd never heard the podcast before, so it was really interesting to be there. And people went nuts when these two women walked out on stage. Yeah, it's really awesome. And then I thought, wow, I can't wait till I see my podcast that I listen to live. As soon as I hear the theme music, I'm going to go nuts.
Yeah,
it's really become, it's more than a cult following now for podcasting, isn't it?
Yeah, whatever's next after a cult following. Yeah. But it's like a friendship. I think people feel like the hosts are their friends. And we actually made a video. So Radiotopia runs a fundraiser every year because we're highly listener supported. And this is another way our community steps up and says, we support the work that you're doing. But for the video we made, we worked with a great filmmaker, and his idea was to show Radiotopia podcast hosts in people's daily lives of listeners. So you would close up, see somebody doing the dishes and zoom out, and Phoebe Judge is next to her helping dry. And, you know, there was a close up of a guy hearing a bedtime story, and you zoom out and it's Nate DeMeo from the Memory Palace telling him that story in the room. So the whole point was like, we're with you. You need us. We need you. Like, we're in this together. And I feel like that sort of sense of generosity and community is really inherent in the podcast landscape.
Well, let's talk about current affairs and the way we as audiences consume current affairs. Julie, how much has broadcasting changed in this area in comparison to the traditional news bulletin?
Oh, it's changed a lot. I mean, some of the most popular and important podcasts coming out of the States right now are the news podcasts. You've got The Daily, this incredible Daily.
I was going to mention The Daily, actually.
I woke up today and thought, oh, it's been out for a while. I better go listen because, yeah. You know, of course, we're ahead of the States time-wise. Really important, I think, more and more, you know, where podcasting went through a phase where people were coming to it for entertainment and comedy and information. Now news is front and center for people, and it's a very vulnerable time, and people are very sensitive to what they're hearing, and they need updates all the time. So as soon as something big happens, a couple of your favorite podcasts drop a bonus special emergency episode, and this is becoming the way a lot of people relate to the news, engage with the news, and, you know, in that way that there are the conversations are going on about it also off the backs of these podcasts. So it's been really important.
And you also know that you don't have to wait to the end of the day to hear the news. You can chuck it on at lunchtime or when you go out for your coffee, and then you've got your fix.
Yeah.
I'm also hearing about people listening to podcasts at different speeds.
Yep. Yes.
Which I don't know if I can do that.
That's the ultimate multitasking. Talk about suck the enjoyment out of it. I've tried. Oh. I have tried.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to have to talk about this a little bit. When you are in a position where you have to listen to many, many, many podcasts for your job, some of the ones that have a little less production value are okay if you speed them up a little bit.
So the news bulletin? The news podcast?
So I don't listen to anything higher than 1.5.
Okay.
1.2 is a very comfortable setting for me. Yeah. It just shaves a few minutes off those 45-minute podcasts. Lets me get to a few more. I don't, I really don't miss any of the production. Now, I've got a list of shows that I will not do that for. And they're like my special experiential, listen to every second that's produced into it for a particular reason. And, you know, I think you just have to weigh, what are you in it for? Is it for pure information? Are you getting an update? You don't actually have to hear every long pause. It's still kind of long if you just speed it up a little.
Okay, I'm convinced.
I still don't know if I'll give it a go.
I felt guilty for a while, and then I just thought, I'm going to just embrace this because it is my reality.
Yeah, it's yours. It's your phone. You do what you want. Now, Sophie, it's all very well for me to get 100 randoms listening to my podcast after I've come up with a few clever hashtags, but how do I get people at the Wheeler Center or Radiotopia or Earwolf to actually take notice of what I'm doing and start supporting my podcast that I record, you know, in my bedroom with a couple of mates?
I think it's all about social media and the community that you build around you. I think that that is what we start paying attention to. I mean, again, something like So You Think You Can Pod is an official competition, and that's people's kind of annual chance to put an idea and a concept to us that might not even have recorded a minute of it. But if you are just slogging away in your bedroom, so we pay attention to the following that you start to gather around you, the people that you're talking to, and you talk to other podcasts and other podcasters. You know, as Julie alluded to before, there is such a strong community out there, and it's not just the affinity that your listeners have with you, which is really important. So don't call them randoms. That's my first tip. You need those people. Invite them into your bedroom for a once a year event.
Every random person.
But you need those randoms. But it's also the affinity that listeners have with each other, that kind of clubhouse feel where with a nod and a wink, they like to kind of they like the idea of the same people listening to the thing that they're listening to and that they're really into. And the more that you can foster that and nurture that, the more that you'll kind of enhance that following.
I guess it's also a sense of having regularity with each show, and also a lot of podcasts that are successful have a niche, or they've found a topic that maybe not everyone else is talking about. There are those random podcasts that people that have good chemistry can just sit together and have good banter for 2 hours. But there's also, I guess it's also important to find something to talk about.
Yeah, and there needs to be an authenticity to it. I think if you have a completely burning passion about one particular thing and you can convey that in a podcast, it's amazing the kind of niche community that you can tap into. Like Steel Saunders' podcast about Star Wars, for example, that's absolute. It's one of the biggest Australian podcasts out there. And it's just mainlining his love of Star Wars.
I think that also you have to just make really good content, and there's a lot of not really good content out there. And there are a lot of people with the ambition but not the skills, or the skills but not enough ambition. And, I mean, it really takes a magic formula of a great idea, the wherewithal, the knowledge, the context to present it in a way that other people will gain something from that. I think that one of the biggest sort of misguided perceptions out there is that you can just make something and if you work, you know, like in overnight, it can get big. And there's such a volume of content out there that you have to do something that really grabs ears and is presented in a very creative and unique way, so a network can identify that there's something special about that and, you know, follow up with some interest in it. But, you know, the reality is the networks deal with a certain small percentage of the podcasts out there, and a lot of them are independent. So I think one thing I like to talk about is just a gentle reality check about how hard it is actually to, you know, make a living on podcasting and sustain yourself, and, you know, don't quit your day job, because even if you're working hard, it could take years to kind of get the momentum going that you need to actually live off the show that you're making.
Well, what grabs your ears, Julie? What are you listening to at the moment?
So I listen to all of the Radiotopia podcasts, and of course I love them all. Yes. Very much, no favorites. And then I do try to keep up with whatever else I can on the side, because, you know, it's professionally something I should do, but also I like to listen for pleasure. So I'm a big fan of Heavyweight from Gimlet. It's one of my favorite storytelling shows with Jonathan Goldstein. I've been a fan of his since his days of his radio show Wiretap that was on the CBC. There's a podcast out of San Francisco called The Stoop that I've been listening to and really enjoying. It's stories of sort of being black in America, and they just talk to the two hosts, Hannah and Leela, like they have a great chemistry. Mm. They talk with great honesty and frankness about their experiences, and also they bring in all sorts of people. So I've been listening to that one a lot. It's always hard when I'm asked, even though I have 80 podcasts that I listen to regularly.
I know, I listen to too many as well. I'm trying to think of what I listen to.
What are your favorites?
I've always listened to, it's actually probably what got me into podcasts. It's from the States. It's called Throwing Shade. And it's Brian Safi and Erin Gibson. They had a TV show actually on TV Land last year. And it's every week they discuss a feminism issue and an LGBTI issue. But they have super chemistry. They're really, really funny. It's very lighthearted. And they usually have a celebrity guest at the end. I listen to that. I listen to various commercial radio show podcast, which I won't name. And also I like long form interview shows. I like Alec Baldwin's podcast, Awards Chatter. Have you heard of that? There's kind of, so he, this, I think his name's, I forgot his name now. I'll cut this out. But anyway,
we won't tell him.
The only thing is his introduction is so long. Mm-hmm. It's way too long. He tells us everything that the guest says basically throughout the whole interview. And sometimes I notice that people in podcasts, you can get a bit trigger happy sometimes.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I will say, you know, editing, the E word, the I word, and the E word. Like, editing has a great, important place in podcasting. And, you know, that's a skill, too. It's a storytelling skill. It takes years and years to develop. I mean, I think it's important to know that all of those big shows out there, yes, anyone can do it, but the shows that are really constantly at the top of the charts, for what that's worth, and it is worth a lot because it gains listeners and then you get bigger sponsorships. But they're all, like, so many of the people involved have been working in the public radio system in the U.S. for decades, years. You know, they have so much experience. They worked on shows. They worked with teams. So they didn't just, like, wake up one day and decide to make a, you know, a hit podcast. And I think that there's going to, we're going to develop into a time where people come to podcasting without that engagement in a public media system and the values of the public media system, and come into this having, you know, not had the benefit of all of that. And I think podcasts will sound different at that time. And, you know, there'll be a bit of reckoning between the quality and the motivation and, like, where that's going, because it has become so moneyed and commercial to some degree and competitive, and now Hollywood's involved, and, you know, so it's going so quickly. And I just think a lot about what the kind of the roots, at least of the storytelling podcast, you know, where those roots were steeped in.
Well, you can catch Julie Shapiro at the Northcote Town Hall tonight for the Wheeler Center, hosted by Sophie Black. Julie and Sophie, thanks for joining us on The Informer.
Thank you so much. You know, I had one thought. Since you're going to produce this anyway, and I don't know if it's interesting, but that Ear Hustle also was the winner of our contest. I think that was another parallel that's so obvious that I forgot to mention.
Oh, wow,
but
cool.
Yeah, so we also did a contest in 2016 and had, you know, a bajillion entries, and Ear Hustle ended up winning that. So
wow.
It's just a very...
Yeah, that is...
They're like ridiculous, sibling shows. Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Both original ideas and doing really well this year, so...
Yeah.
Good luck to whoever wins tonight.
Yeah, I know. No pressure.
No pressure at all.
Thanks, guys.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.